This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, Nick Gillard, DR Kernas and James Howard. What a show we have for you over the next hour. We're going to be talking about that Chelsea game, an informed Chelsea just running in to that informed side. Six wins on the bounce. Roy said sometimes you just have to face it. It's one of those days at the office. Max Matthews will be joining us to talk and give you his take on what Crystal Palace are doing so far this season, and delighted to say Dean Gordon will be on the show later this evening giving us his thoughts as well.
I'm so tempted just go Dino.
Well, you've done it. You've done it. I mean, you gave in to temptation. Yeah. So there you go. He was tempted and he done it. What a show. It can only mean when Nick interrupts me at the start that it is time for the Crystal Palace Fan Show. We wouldn't have it any other way. Let's get into the Chelsea game then, because it started off as a typical Roy Hodgson away performance. Very disciplined, you know, solid at the back, 0-0. And then he goes through that second half, maybe then trying to get a counter-attack, trying to get the goal. Didn't work out like that, DR. What did you make of the performance on the weekend?
I mean, I think it was a game of two halves. The first half, we defended well as a team, but going forward, we just lacked a bit of a threat. I don't think we had a touch in their box till around the 35th or 38th minute between there. So we defended well as a team, limited their chances, and they were clearly frustrated going into the second half. But in the second half, conceded it was at first I thought, oh, is it just a good team goal? But then looking back at it, it seems like Tompkins was a bit out of position. So it was a bit of a sloppy mistake from him. And yeah, we tried to kick on after that. And I've seen people say, oh, we tried to go for it after we were 1-0 down, but I didn't feel that way. I still felt like throughout the game we just had no attacking threat, and I don't think it's down to the three players that were up there. I think it was just down to the tactics, really.
Yeah, it was the first time that Crystal Palace failed to attempt a single shot in the first half of a Premier League match since March 2014. That was away to Swansea. DR saying not a lot of creative threat there. On the day afterwards, James, Roy said that he was proud of his players. He wasn't disappointed in the performance. Just one of those things. Sometimes it is one of those things, but it wasn't great to hear that. Do you agree?
Yeah, he's a safe pair of hands, Roy. And I feel like I'm coming here every week and I'm repeating myself. So I've sort of going to try and put a different bit of
and I'm scared because you're sitting closer to me now. Yeah, and I know sometimes you can get a little bit angry.
Just sit back and have a cigar, yeah. Guys, because I'm just...
Do you want to swap seats, Nick?
Yeah, you're right. It was definitely first half defence against attack. Gaeta was our commander-in-chief, oozes confidence and gives the defence belief. And it was a good performance first half. James McArthur, midfield Trojan, fantastic player, workhorse. But again, like you say, there's no real creativity. Chelsea step up a gear second half. They've got quality. They've got Pulisic and Tammy Abraham. You know, we can't compete with that. We had James McArthur that came off after the goal. replaced by Schlupp. You know, both are attacking midfielders in Alex, in Max Meyer and Camarasa, who are not even on the bench. It's not pretty, but it's effective. Is that enough for Crystal Palace fans? There's no money available, but there's no stadium development. Question mark, exclamation mark. It's going to be the game again. It's going to be the same against Liverpool at home. Same backs against the wall, rely on a lucky counter attack. I mean, I don't know. I'm just getting a bit, little bit monotonous here.
Well, Nick, firstly, I want to know what you think of Palace, but as a teacher, question mark, exclamation mark, what did you think of that from James?
Asterisk, star, exclamation mark, question
mark.
What is
going on? It turns into brackets. A punctuation show. Yeah.
If you read the Beano, you know what that means.
Nick.
Look, we were always going to lose against Chelsea. Last international break, we were sick and we were playing five teams above us. The fact that, barring Tottenham, who aren't above us, we've not been trounced by any of them. I am worried about us going forward. I knew that we'd have a terrible, terrible run. And I knew that people would moan about it. And we've got Liverpool to come yet, and people are going to moan even more about that. It wasn't our best performance. There was a point in the first half, the ball had gone through to, it was Ayew or Zaha, near the edge of the box, him and a defender tangled up, and the ref blew up, said it was a free kick for the defender. The replay showed there wasn't a foul. I'm just wondering, all right, I'm not going to go into a VAR one, but just little decisions like that can turn games. I'm just wondering what would have happened if we'd have gone 1-0 up then. I am concerned about going forward. Wilf, we'll discuss later, is not in his best form. And we don't have a player that we can give the ball to and they're going to be away with it, like we used to have with AJ, like Wilf used to be, like Vince Hilaire, like John Salako when he used to get the ball on the wing. Michael Hughes used to do the same from the middle of the pitch. We just haven't got that player in the centre of the pitch that's either A, controlling things, or B, taking the game to the opposition. And that's what's frustrating. But the fact that we've kept the scores down, I think, is a positive.
The thing that I have a problem with is that even going into the game, we were negative in terms of our full squad. I didn't have no problem with our starting lineup, but I mean, putting Jairo Riederwald and McCarthy, I think McCarthy deserves that role on the bench, but putting Jairo Riederwald there instead of Camarasa or Max Meyer, it just limited our options and it limited us having an opportunity of a plan B. And you can see that because we have no attacking midfielders. And that's what I don't understand, because Jairo Riederwald is not going to play. The last time he has played was in a 17-18 season against Brighton. So why on earth are you putting Jairo Riederwald on the bench and not giving one of Camarasa or Max Meyer an opportunity when we do, let's say that we do go 1-0 down? That's what I was worried about. I was like, all right, who's going to come on and change the game if we're in a
back foot? But Townsend started though, didn't he?
Yeah, but Townsend, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. And why isn't one of them on the bench? I mean, he said before the game, Roy Hodgson, that there were no injuries. So clearly no problems there. So why put on two defensive midfielders? And we already had another two playing on field. So in total, we had four in the matchday squad. And we don't have no attacking midfielders. I mean, imagine if you're Camarasa or Max Meyer and you're sitting, you're not even on a bench, where I don't know where you are, and you're seeing that game and you're 2-0 down and Roy Hodgson's putting on James McCarthy when you're 2-0 down at Stamford Bridge instead of giving you a chance.
Yeah, but DR, what has Max Meyer done this year to warrant him starting or to come on? Because every time he's very offering little end products at the minute.
He has. I mean, the only game, I think it was the Leicester game last week, where he came on and didn't really offer much. But I mean, in chances, in overall chances, he hasn't had that many this season. And Victor Camarasa, I don't want him to start on him because he I think 5 minutes in Premier League, that's it, something like that. So both of them have had limited chances, and in games like this, when you're 2-0 down, you want to actually, I know they're not going to change the game and make us do a crazy comeback and win the game 3-2, but at least put them on and give them a chance and see what they can offer. We were 2-0 down and we were putting on Jeffrey Schlupp. Like, no disrespect to Jeffrey Schlupp, we've seen enough of him. Then why don't you have one of them on the bench?
I agree, and personally I feel that some of these games Roy's going into them thinking we've lost already
beaten,
and I don't like it. It's If the club come out and say, you know, we're consolidating, we mustn't go down because we are spending a lot of money on redeveloping the ground, and we can see the evidence of that, fair enough. And we can say, do you know what, Roy Hodgson's a safe pair of hands. we could possibly retain Roy's services for the next season or two. In that period of time, we have to be extremely careful that we do not get relegated, in which case we have to be a little bit boring, for want of a better word. And I could then understand it. But if there's no other plan and it's we're purely playing football and we're trying to entertain the fans, then we're not really going for it. We're not entertaining the fans. And we are going out there trying to sort of, you know, hopefully lose 2-0 rather than 5-0.
And like I've had no problems with over the last couple of games against teams like Leicester, Arsenal and City, because they are better positions, and also we did have the options on the bench. But when you're going into games against Chelsea and having no plan B options, and just as you said, just sticking by, oh, we're going to go with plan A, and let's say that we do lose 2-0, that's it. That's what I have a problem with, and it sends a negative message to them players, because why on earth should they be motivated to train if you're not going to give them a chance? Why does that matter?
You know, two seasons ago, I would have absolutely looked forward to the next home game against Liverpool, because two or three seasons ago, on a regular basis, we used to beat the top sides at Selhurst. Man City, you know, Arsenal, Liverpool, you know, we were famous for that 3-3 draw. But I'm thinking now, I know exactly what's going to happen now. We're going to be on the back foot from the start. Our goal is going to be peppered for 90 minutes, and we'll either concede early on and it'll be, you know, a couple of goals to nil, or we'll concede second half and it'll still be a couple of goals to nil, because we cannot survive 90 minutes on the back foot against the quality of Liverpool because this is what happened against Man City, and you could see it in the first 5 minutes. We're going to lose. We cannot survive 90 minutes against a quality side.
Well,
like
if they just got better, what's changed then? You're saying, you know, two seasons ago we would, you know, go toe to toe with these teams, we'll get the results. Now we're not doing that. Is that Roy? What's this? Because he was still there. Well, what's changed, James?
Yeah, right. I analysed this, and I think when the managers we had at that time, we had Sam Allardyce, and we had what's his name?
Frank de Boer.
No, Pardew.
We had Pardew, Pulis.
Sorry, Pulis and Allardyce were particularly good at defending from set pieces, corners, etc. And this is where we've been struggling recently, especially from corners. So, you know, although we might have only have, you know, sneaked a 1-0 win against the top sides, at least we weren't conceding goals, and we were winning at Selhurst by the odd goal. But I don't have that confidence anymore against the big sides.
I think the fact is they're just so much better than they were. We haven't got the best squad in the world. I'm going to have to get you some oil for that seat, mate. It's like we're in a graveyard here.
I think we're going to change it at the break.
Yeah, we've got we haven't got the best squad in the world. Let's see how we do against Bournemouth before we throw all our toys out the pram.
I agree.
I have to disagree with you there in terms of confidence.
Careful, Dio. You're sitting right next to him.
I mean, Roy still, he's got results against big sides.
Roy's 300th Premier League game in charge on the weekend.
Exactly, yeah. We have got some good results, but I mean, if you're looking at the Chelsea game in particular, I feel like, yes, tactics is play a part, but I feel like it's a mixture of tactics and player performances, because when it came down to it, there were just so many misplaced passes from individuals, and they didn't seem confident. Now, then again, you could look at it and you could say, well, what are they doing in training? But he has got the results against big sides. I mean, the only problem, as I said, was with the whole squad and in the Chelsea game, which I wasn't confident with. But yeah, I still believe in Roy carrying us on and keeping us up. That's the only thing, really. He can't take us to the next step, but he will be able to keep us up.
Well, still believe in Roy. Let's quickly turn the attention onto that London derby, not just about Roy, Nick, because this was Crystal Palace's 100th Premier League London derby. Won 23, drawn 23, lost 54. Only Fulham have posted a lower points per game ratio in such games, 0.84, than Crystal Palace. 0.9 the Eagles get from those London derbies in the Premier League. What do you make of that?
Well, you've got Arsenal, you've got Chelsea, you've got Tottenham. What London teams are there that we can kind of say we're level with? West Ham. I've always put us, I know they won the World Cup, but I always see us being fairly level with them in the fact that we've gone up and down over the last few seasons. Quite a few of the fans have got ideas way above their station.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I know, it's poor, but what can you do? I mean, all I'm worried about is what's our points ratio against Brighton. Mm. You know, that's where our big rivalry lies.
It's tough though, because DR, I know you don't want to mention the manager and setting up, and James, you wanted to make a point, but now no wins, you know, three losses out of the last four games. Do we do a knee-jerk reaction here, or you know, because still 12th in the table? I know Nick's saying no, but where do you two stand on it? Because you two slightly different opinion.
I'm happy with where we are in the league, don't get me wrong, and I'm happy to an extent with the manager. I'm just frustrated and disappointed that he doesn't try a plan B every now and then and try and excite things a bit more for the fans, especially at home games. I just think that there's too much negativity, and I think, you know, especially on the bench, we could definitely need to liven it up a bit more with some creative midfielders.
I think on a whole, where we're sitting right now, I think it's a fair reflection on how we played so far this season, because even when we were sixth, I don't think much has changed in terms of tactics from last season, but we were just solid as a team, and we were more clinical in front of goal at home. So that's the only thing that's really changed. So, I mean, the performances, I don't think it's really improved on from last season. So I think 12th is a fair reflection, and it's more achievable. It's somewhere where I wouldn't be too surprised about if we do end up there at the end of the season.
Nick, you believe that something else is taking part here?
I've written on a bit of paper, Alan Kerbishley syndrome. We all remember Charlton all those years back, not happy with their lot. Look, we ain't ever going to win the league unless we're bought out by somebody. I keep going on about these six games. They were all free hits, every single one of them. Yes, I know we're going to be upset that we've lost three in a row. And yes, it doesn't look good on paper. But the teams we've played are really, really good. Leicester. There was nothing wrong with being beat by Leicester. They're one of the best teams I've seen come to Selhurst in recent years. They didn't stop moving. Unless we start getting players that can move about a bit more. Now, whether that's down to the manager, whether the misplaced passes are down to the manager for not transmitting enough confidence and, you know, let's play for the draw. I don't know. But please don't panic. And don't chuck the baby out with the bathwater, because who else is there?
Well, don't panic just yet. A fiery one on the Crystal Palace show, talking all about the results and the manager. Next up, we are joined by Max Matthews.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, Nick Gillard, DR Kernaz and James Howard. While we were talking about the team, the manager, you know, are the fans maybe getting ahead of themselves? No knee-jerk reactions here. Still in 12th, still going well. They've just faced informed teams. Delighted to say, joining us now, and you still can, by the way, call us on 0208 7020 558 or tweet us for all your Eagles thoughts at Love Sport Radio, but we are joined by Love Sport's very own Max Matthews. Max, a real pleasure to have you on this evening. Not the best result on the weekend, obviously, but they're up against Chelsea, who are doing very well. Six wins on the bounce, just one of those days. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right, because ultimately they are a really, really good team. And although our away form has been pretty impressive, especially against big sides, you've got to say that they just had too much power, kind of too much. And we were outdone by the better team. And to be honest, if Palace fans are thinking, you know, are getting angry or disappointed about just losing to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, I think that they're getting ahead of themselves.
Hi, Max. Joel Wood went out injured, of course, in a game in the first half. How big of a blow do you think that's going to be?
Well, The main reason it's a problem is because we only have one right back. And I don't blame Roy Hodgson for this problem at all. I blame Steve Parish, the chairman. During the whole summer, as soon as Aaron Wan-Bissaka left, Hodgson said, we've only got one right back, we've only got one left back, we need some fullbacks. And for one reason or another, the money wasn't spent. We went into the season with only one right back and only one left back, and now our one right back has got injured, and we're going to suffer because Martin Kelly is going to probably be the replacement there. He's a centre back, and you know, I think he'll get caught out.
I thought he was a right back as well, to be honest with you. It's James here, by the way. I think Martin Kelly did start as a right back with us, so in my mind, and probably a lot of fans, they're thinking that Martin Kelly is a right back cover, don't you think?
You know, I'm not sure. He has played, you're right, but I think he's kind of, he's more comfortable in the centre. That's the way that his kind of body's suited to. He's quite tall, but he's not fantastically quick, and his feet aren't brilliant. And I think, personally, he's more comfortable in the centre. I think in interviews, he might have hinted the same as well. So we'll see how he does there. He's not a terrible replacement, but I feel like we should have had a specialist right back there as well.
Haven't we got any, hello Max, haven't we got anybody we can bring up from the youth team like we did with Aaron? That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, I've been to a couple of under 23 games, and actually right back is a position that they struggle in. A couple of times.
Typical Palace.
We did have someone against Colchester, didn't we, in the cup game? One of the youngsters played at right back.
We had Sam Woods as well, but again, he's a natural centre back, and I think Hodgson was playing there due to the lack of options we had as natural fullback. As I say, David Boateng is more of a midfielder, and he's played there for the under 23s, but it's a problem position for us at the moment.
Yeah, another problem I think we've got is Wilfried Zaha. I mean, he hasn't been playing particularly as well as last season. He's been doing okay, but I think I'm a bit concerned because he had a real tussle with Reece James, the youngster for Chelsea, and you know, on more than one occasion, Wilf came out second best. And I'm worried that it's now going to start affecting Wilf's confidence. He might think he's not the player that he thought he was last season. What do you think about Wilf?
Maybe. He's very much a confident player. And when he gets frustrated or annoyed, doesn't feel things are going his way, he can sometimes fade out of games a little bit, which is maybe a trait that would stop him being massively successful at a huge club. I think he obviously will go on to bigger and better things after Palace, but that might be something, kind of consistency of the really high-level performance is something that's maybe holding him back. In terms of while he's at Palace, I actually think he didn't play that badly against Chelsea. He just came up against a youngster in Reece James who played fantastically well. Really, really, really good player. And aren't England blessed in the right-back department?
It's true that, but he only made two tackles on him. Wilf made about 10, 11 successful dribbles. So although he made it, it seemed he was better than he was, I think. When you look at the actual analysis of the game, he only got him twice. So it sounds like he's come out better than he actually did, which is weird.
Yeah, he didn't do better at all, I would say. He actually has improved markedly since the start of the season when he was very quiet. So I'm not too worried about Zaha's performances for us going forward.
It was 27 this week. Controversial question: has he peaked?
Well, I think he's only really ever played for Palace, and I'm discounting the kind of short spells at United and Cardiff where he didn't really get a chance. I think it's impossible to say that, given he's never really had the chance on a higher stage. If he went to Leicester and got in their team, and I think he would get in their team, Leicester as an example, I think, you know, he'd be tested because he'd be around players who are technically better, who are performing at a higher level more consistently. And actually, as much as I want to stay at Palace for the rest of his career, I would love it if he went to a higher club and you know, he proved what he could do, and he proved that he could do it on a higher stage than Palace.
Yeah, interesting there. Max, really appreciate you coming on tonight. Always good to hear your insight. Max Matthews there, talking a little bit about the game on the weekend and Palace so far this season. DR, we'll have to throw straight back into it. Nick, he's meant to be team member, firing shots. Zaha, has he peaked? Can you believe that? DR, don't have that.
Yeah, Come on, Nick. I don't think he's peaked. I mean, you look at not only Wilfried Zaha's performance, Andros Townsend and Jordan Ayew. I mean, Jordan Ayew has been brilliant so far this season, but all three of them struggled, and I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, we're just so worried about Chelsea's attacking force that we didn't put enough numbers forward to support them players, and I feel like that's why Wilfried struggled, not only Chelsea game, but he struggled against, I think, all the big sides that we've played recently. It's due to how conservative we've been going forward, and that's why I don't think I would blame Wilf in particular for his performance. I mean, yeah, there was a situation where he could have done better, and in the first half, his frustrations was clearly there as he, I think, gave away around four fouls. So you could see that, but I wouldn't go at Wilf and say that, oh, he's peaked now. I feel like he's still up there. He's still growing as a player.
So it's the players around him that are to blame, you think?
Yeah, I'll say so. And tactics.
Amazing.
And tactics.
Let's get James in. What do you think, James? Your opinion?
You know, we lost a particularly good, obviously, fullback, didn't we, Wan-Bissaka? So maybe Wilf's having to come back a bit more and track back and defend. And you've said that before, yeah, DR, exactly, on occasions. Yeah. That, you know, we get a lot more bodies behind the ball. We can't rely on our defenders as much. You know, I think overall, everyone realises that our fullback positions are probably the weakest link in our team. Apart from left back maybe going forward, but definitely defensively, we have to be very, very careful when we are being under attack on the wing, that's for sure.
There was a lot made, obviously, of the battle with Reece James on the weekend, and a lot of, you know, people were quick to say, oh, Zaha was in Reece James' pocket and didn't Reece James do well? And yeah, look, he had a good game, and those battles are going to happen in a game. You can't always get the better of your opponent, but it's always a storyline. It always seems to be a big headline when it's Zaha. It doesn't happen when it's anyone else. Obviously, after the game, there was something in the car. Fans were taunting him in the car. Zaha, you know, replied, and that sort of took away from the game and the dribbles that Zaha did do. What did you make of the thing after? Because it's always with Zaha, there seems, and I want to defend him, but there's always a little bit of baggage, isn't there?
There is, but I'm not going to go out here and blame him, because I'm trying to think, if I was in his position, I would do the same, or if not worse, because you have to realise at the end of the day, you're still human. I don't care if you earn 100,000 a week or how much you earn. If people are coming at you outside of the game and trying to abuse you, then why would I have it? I mean, you could see that Wilfried Zaha, he easily gets provoked, and that's just who he is. Not everyone's the same. And
but people try to use that against him, don't they?
They do. But also, another thing is with Zaha is the fact that he apparently handed in a transfer request on last of the window, so the storyline will always remain there with Wilf, even before this summer. I mean, he's a great player, and there's always questions about should he make the next move onto the bigger step and join a European club. So there will always be questions about Wilfried Zaha when he doesn't perform, because he's just that big of a player and he got that much media attention.
Well, if he's not going to perform, then these teams aren't going to come in with the money required for Steve Parish to let him go. Steve Parish said that. If he had the offers in that he thought he was worth, he would have gone. But the offers that came in were nowhere near. And is it true that he gave his transfer request in on the last day, or is that just...
I'm not too sure. Like, I don't know about it, like, to confirm yes or no. But the one thing I'll say is that the club needs to also make a decision on how long they want to keep Zaha. So let's say we keep Zaha for another 2 to 3 years. Could we get what we could potentially get now in 2 to 3 years' time? I don't think so, because right now I feel like this is probably his best years. I don't think he has peaked, but he's slowly reaching there.
Well, DR saying that Zaha handing a transfer request on the last day of the window, wanting a move. Someone who could be on the move, Dougie Friedman, apparently interested in the vacancy up at Hearts in the Scottish Premiership. We're going to be talking about that. And remember, Dean Gordon is still to come.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined with the Back of the Nest podcast, Nick Gillard, DR Kernaz and James Howard. Still to come. And don't forget, because I did say don't remember just before we went away, but please remember and please don't forget, Dean Gordon is coming up. Look, we all make mistakes. So I can hold my hands up and I can own them, although DR will definitely never, ever let me forget it. let's talk a little bit about Dougie Friedman now, because he's linked with the managerial vacancy up at Hearts in the Scottish Premiership, obviously a big Palace figure. What do we know so far about this, DR? What's the latest on this?
Well, basically, I think it was reported by a Scottish newspaper that he's interested in a vacancy at Hearts, a managerial vacancy at Hearts. So I'm not I'm not too sure if he'll take it, but if he leaves again, then I don't think...
No way back this time.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. And the interesting thing about it is we always talk about like transfers, let's say Max Meyer, Victor Camarasa, and you question. We always question what's the relationship between the sporting director and Roy Hodgson. So if he does leave, it'll be quite significant, in my opinion, because there's only around 2 months left till the January transfer window, and clearly do need signings. So I think it'll be a big blow. But I've seen people say, should Roy make this step up there? I've seen some crazy, crazy statements. And I'm not too sure. I mean, some of the signings he has made as director of football, Gary Cahill, Jordan Ayew, James McCarthy, Camarasa, Sako, Serlov, Kouyaté, Batshuayi, Maya, Gaita. I mean, there are some good signings. And he's also had some very questionable ones in Rakip and Yak, which didn't appear for the under-23s team. So, yeah.
You can't get them all, DR. As I just said, don't remember. You know, we all make mistakes. You know, Dougie's going to make some mistakes, make some good ones, make some bad ones. Yeah. It gets a lot of criticism, though, sometimes from the fan base, James. Rightly so, or what do you make of it?
Yeah, I think he left at a very poignant time for us when we were sort of riding quite high in the old championship and we were going for a promotion, and it was in the middle of the season, and it was a similar club like ours, and they were just offering more wages because they'd just been relegated from the Premier League. So there's a bit of bad taste, and I think the crowd of supporters are 50-50 split on this one. Be interesting to see Nick's view on it, but I was very unhappy about it at the time. And I personally didn't want him to come back. I mean, I know he's a bit of a legend-ish when he was a player for us. I wouldn't put him up there as in legends as like Ian Wright or Vince Hilaire. He wasn't that good enough, to be honest, to be a legend. But if you're calling a legend someone that scores an injury time winner to keep you in the second tier of English football, then yeah, then he's a legend because that's what he did. I'm in two minds. It's very disappointing if he has been bringing in some, like you say, because some good players, and he's been with us again for a while, and he's probably sort of bedded in sort of his contacts, and we might have had some decent players on horizon that might have come in January. Well, if he just up sticks and goes, then we might lose all that connection, and then yet another transfer window where we miss an opportunity to get a striker in, which is probably our number one priority, and maybe, you know, strengthen another couple of positions as well.
Well, as James said, a legend, obviously, Nick, but is it a blow? And if it is a blow, how big is that blow if you do lose him?
I don't honestly know what he does other than the players you've mentioned. So I don't know. I'm going to be honest. Nobody knows what he does.
I hope he's not listening.
I love your honesty, Nick.
So I don't know what difference it would make.
Is that a problem that the fans don't know what he does? You know, we need more transparency. That, you know, it's worrying that he obviously plays a significant role in the club and you, the fans, don't know what that role is.
Yeah, that's probably partly down to my ignorance as well, though. But no, I know it. You know what I mean? We're surmising about so many things on shows like this. We haven't got a clue, really. And
if we didn't, we'd have no show, Nick.
This is true.
Easy. We'll be out of jobs by Christmas if Nick's in charge.
No, but you know what I mean. We can only go by what we know. Will it make a difference? Well, it depends who you get in. Will it make a difference if Roy goes? Well, it depends who the replacement manager is. Unless you get somebody decent in to cover it. I quite like the idea of Roy going upstairs, though I'll still always remember Sorloff, which will put me off. I'd like Roy to still be involved in the club when he does. They don't hang up boots as a manager, do they? What do they hang up? Clipboards.
The problem I've got is the timing of it all. It's not
his fault that Hart's not a manager.
I know, but this is what happened before. It's all very well at the end of the season and you've got time to regroup and you've got time until the transfer. But when these things happen during the middle of the season, I know the opportunity's there and now, but I just feel that there's, you know, he is a supposedly a Palace legend in inverted commas. There you go. And if he is, then surely, and he's been invited back to work for us twice after the first time when things didn't go particularly well and there was a bit of animosity there. I think he owes it maybe to the club to say, look, actually, would you be okay if I go rather than say I'm going? There's no choice.
All we've got is a report in the Scotsman. and lots of Palace fans on Twitter to go on.
Yeah, but the one thing I would say is Roy moving upstairs scares me. Like, no.
Your face.
That shouldn't happen, because I'm scared that Peter Crouch is going to come out of retirement and play up front for us in January if that happens. Like, jokes aside, like Phil Bardsley and stuff, Roy having full control of recruitment, you could say, well, it'd be good if he's the manager. But I mean, if he's not the manager and he's having full control of recruitment, then that's a bit worrying. Like, I don't see us making... Well, of course, they're not being used now, but if Roy moves upstairs, maybe the managers will start using players like Camarasa and Max Meyer. But if Roy moves upstairs, then we might get rid of them players and get players that's more suited to Roy when he's not even controlling the team. So I wouldn't want that. I don't think Roy wants it as well in particular. If you're looking at Roy's comments, he wants to manage. He wants to manage day to day out there in the training ground. And
for how much longer though do we feel?
I think a couple more seasons. I mean, two or three more seasons at max. I feel like this, if he gets another contract extension, that might be his final contract. But I don't see Roy wanting to move upstairs and do that role. And also, I don't want him to do that.
Well, what Nick says, we're not entirely sure what Dougie Freeman's role is. Someone who will know maybe what that role is, and is there any truth in this rumour? It is Dean Gordon, and he joins us next. Please remember to hear that.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show with me, Charlie Hawkins, on Love Sport Radio. I'm joined with the Back of the Nest podcast, Nick Gillard, DR Kernaz, and James Howard. Unbelievably, you can't make this up. Genuinely, you can't write it. I said to you, don't remember that Dean Gordon's coming on, and Dean Gordon's not remembered because he's not answered the phone. Oh, so he's heeded my advice, and he's not coming on there. Well, he's not answered. We're going to keep trying him. Dean, please remember. Please don't forget that you are coming on. Honestly, what a shambles. Dino, we're going to keep trying. He did say 8:45. He's a busy man. We did break a little bit early because I was so excited to get him on. We will keep trying. Dean Gordon.
Can I just clarify earlier?
Please, Nick.
When I said, has Zaha peaked? I wasn't saying that he had. I was just putting the question out there.
No. We've clipped it up now.
We were having this... I was having a conversation with my son on Saturday. He said we should have sold him.
Wow. We should have called him tonight.
We play better without him in the team at the moment. And I'm trying to think of the last game we played where he wasn't. He had a couple of injury spells out and we didn't do too bad. But because the focus is on him so much, the rest of the team can't play.
I think we'll see the best of wealth after the Liverpool game when we face teams around us and we're less defensive focused than we are right now, which I don't blame Roy for, because if we are more open, then these teams have got quality players and they will just destroy us 5-6-0. There's always that possibility. I'm not saying that they will, but it limits, by the way that we play, it limits our chances of losing that heavily. So yeah, I feel like when we face the Burnleys, even though Burnley, they're playing good, I feel like that's when we'll see the best of Wilf again.
He pluralised the football team. Now, you can't say when you play your Burnleys and your Aston Villas.
Oh, here we go. We're having English lesson live on air.
Question mark, exclamation mark.
Add the full stop.
Which is exactly what I said earlier. We'll get it all on
this show.
We'll know where we are when we've played Bournemouth and we've played Brighton. And who else have we got in that relatively...
Brighton. Brighton. We've got Burnley, Bournemouth, Watford, Brighton, Newcastle, and West Ham, and Southampton, no. Norwich. See, all like
if we're not in the top eight at the end of that run, we'll be in trouble.
I think that's it. I think we are going for a tough spell. We're still mid-table, but once we get through Liverpool, that's when we need to show the money and see players like get on with it, do your job. Zaha, you need to step up a bit, get a few goals. And then we hopefully will be pushing top 10.
But we would like to see us have a go at Liverpool, which we didn't do against Chelsea for whatever reason.
That ain't going
to
happen.
Is that the question, though, Nick, for Zaha? To take that next step is consistency, not to have a spurt of 4 or 5 games when he looks brilliant. And then, you know, I don't want to say go missing, but have a fair few quieter games after. That's the next step for Zaha.
Indeed, that's always been his thing, is his consistency. Remember, we had the conversation before about when the transfer window comes around and his name is mentioned. He does dip. He hasn't scored this season. That's not good enough.
But to be fair, we haven't helped him as well. It's not
like Palace are lighting it up with goals. No, we talk about it every week.
There's that, but there's also the fact that the way that we play, especially against these big sides over the last... I mean, against Norwich and Wolves, I mean, I want Wilf to make that step up, but against Norwich and Wolves, he did have good games. Like, it's not like Wilfred Zaha's had a disastrous season. I mean, I wanted him to take the next step, and has he taken the next step? No, not really, but these are hard run of games, and if you're... Because of how we're setting up, we can't get the best out of Wilf right now.
We haven't helped him, you're right, because we've lost players and we haven't replaced them. You know, Wan-Bissaka we've lost. We had Batshuayi in the team last season. You know, over the last couple of seasons, you know, we had Kabai, fantastic midfielder that could retain possession, pass the ball. You know, look what you said about last weekend, how many times we lost the ball. Johan Kabai was fantastic at keeping the ball and passing it and relieving a bit of pressure on the other team members. And that's the problem.
He was one of those players you didn't realise how good he was until he wasn't in the team. Yeah,
Johan Kabai and Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
I love Kabai.
Yeah, and
I forgot about Loftus-Cheek as well.
Remember when we beat Leicester at home 5-0? We were just passing about like we were Barcelona. It was just ridiculous. I didn't know what I was seeing. Like,
and Ruben and Wilf had a fantastic little partnership going. Yeah, that second half of the season.
I mean, we lost. But the only thing that I can't get over personally is the fact that we didn't replace Aaron Wan-Bissaka. We had enough time, and we knew that this situation was always a possibility and Wardy getting injured. And he got injured. Now we're playing Martin Kelly as right back. Yes, he can play right back, but in modern football... In modern football, is he a modern right back? No, he's not. And that's my problem. And now,
is Roy a modern manager?
No. We're just outdated, really. We just need a little update to our system.
But you say you need a right-back, and we know the problems they are. We mentioned it earlier in the youth coming through, but, you know, James mentioned it there, the stadium and everything else going on. Were Palace ever going to reinvest that 50 million, whatever position it was?
It's not reinvesting all the 50 million. You just need to we just need to make a right-back signing. Because now, all right, Martin Kelly's playing right-back, but it's also left a hole in the centre-back partnership with Cahill, because I thought Kelly and Cahill had a good partnership there, but now that can't happen because Kelly's forced to play right-back, so...
Sacco's back.
What's that all behind?
Okay, DR.
Just the way you went Waldy, and then you went, he can't play right-back, he's playing right-back.
All right, so we've cashed in 25 million early for the Wan-Bissaka money with that bank, and they've paid us in advance for the money we'd have got from Man United. Yeah, as far as I know, that's true. Now,
it's fairly common these days.
Imagine we got that and 10 million more. So we're talking 35 million.
Mm.
We need a striker. We need a right back. Do you split that 35 million and try and get one each for both of that, or do you just splash it all on one or the other?
You're telling me if they've cashed it in early, that tells me they need the money now. They need the money for other things, not because they want to spend. They need it in other areas because then they can drip feed it through otherwise. You say we need a striker, a Palace going to spend in January?
That's the $1 million question, isn't
it? They didn't spend in the summer.
I think first of all, we need a right back. I know we need a striker as well, but if we're looking at positions, let's see how Kelly does there. But I mean, we're going into the season with one left back and right back. It's just ridiculous, really.
I think the need for a striker is more than the need for a right back, to be honest with you. I mean, that's where I feel that we're struggling, is just getting goals. So yeah, I can kind of put up with the likes of Kelly, because he can do a job. He might not be flying down the wing, but he can still defend.
DR, this is a really silly question, but obviously we know Palace are scoring, struggling to score goals. Will a striker solve that? Obviously, I know, but it comes from the play. It comes from the creativity. A striker doesn't instantly mean Palace are going to start scoring 2-3 a game.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at this season, Jordan Ayew, when he has had the chances, he has finished them. I don't think we should be over-relying on him, but then again, I feel like... Our main areas that we need to focus on is more creativity rather than a striker up top, because it's not like we're creating lots of chances and Jordan Ayew is not finishing them. It's the fact that we're not actually creating chances in the first place. So that's why I wouldn't look at striker position as a main priority.
I was going to say, there's no point in going out there looking for another midfield creative player where you haven't tried the one that you've got in over the summer. That's just nonsense.
It's a really valid point, James. Let's turn our attentions. Obviously, there's no game on the weekend, but let's quickly look at the fixtures coming up. How vital are these fixtures coming up? Liverpool at home, Burnley away, Bournemouth at home, Watford away. Look, 12th in the league. It's going well. You were just 6th. We know it's a sticky patch at the minute, but those next 4 games... Crucial games. All games. DR smiling. I don't know why. He's going to say something about Wardy or something.
I was going to say something about Liverpool. It's a must-win game, isn't it? And about against Burnley, nah. They're harder.
If we haven't got 7 points out of those four games, I'll be very disappointed.
Really?
I think we'll draw away to Burnley, and if we can't beat Watford and Newcastle, then Watford and Bournemouth, then we're in trouble.
Wow. Okay. I don't know if I agree with that, James.
Especially Watford, because they are poor.
They've turned it round slightly.
Watford have turned it round now. I think we're unlucky to be playing them this time. But I would still expect us to get a win over either Watford or Bournemouth, and I would hope that we would pick up points on the road as well. So, yeah, I'd probably say 4-6 points, I don't know.
I think it will show these run of games until basically the new year. New Year's is going to show where we'll end up this season. I mean, I'm more of a results over performance guy. So if we have one shot on target and it goes in and we win 1-0 and we play dreadful, I'm happy with it because we managed to get the 3 points.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I care about. I hear that. Yeah. So if we manage to get the results against these teams, then I'm happy. That's what I'm not really, because football hasn't been great.
It's really interesting because I think there's either two camps. You want results or you want results and performances, because no one wants just performances because points are the things that matter. But James said, we want a bit more excitement for the home fans. You're saying we go to Chelsea, we nick a draw. I don't care if we're terrible. We play at home and we get the win.
Yeah.
I don't care.
That's what I care about.
James, you don't agree with that, do you?
Don't get me wrong. I don't mind a 1-0, but I can enjoy a game if I see a really good defensive display. Mm. Yeah, but if I see us win 1-0 and we were absolute rubbish and we were lucky, then, yeah, I feel like a bit...
The only thing I'll say about that is when we were sixth place, everyone was on a high and we weren't playing great then. Yeah. So that's why I'm more results.
Well, Nick, you're saying 7 points, and if we don't get 7 points, then you will be worried. You're the one who said don't throw the baby out with a bathwater. Let's not have a knee-jerk reaction. 7 points from those 12 feels quite high for me. You know, it's a big statement, the teams in and around those four games. Why would it change for you after those?
Just because I don't know, they just seem like winnable games.
What, Burnley away? They just beat West Ham 3-0.
West Ham, they're not exactly setting the world on fire.
But Burnley aren't pushovers, are they? Watford away, no. Still a tricky away day when Watford have turned it round. They're fighting for their lives. Bournemouth at home, they give everyone a game.
To be fair, what game is easy in the Premier League?
This is the point I'm trying to make. So to say 7 out, because it doesn't work like that. You could say 3 would do, then you get 9. Do you know? It doesn't work like that, does it? But 7, to set that as the benchmark.
Well, out of those four games, I've gone for 2 wins and a draw.
Mm.
But I'd be happy with that.
But I think the way that the fixtures were set up, and the fact that we had City, Arsenal, Leicester and Chelsea, and we've hardly managed to pick up any points going into these games, I think more pressure's on Roy to ensure that we do get the points.
How many points for you then, DR?
Oh, we're doing points now.
I'll give you a minute.
How many games?
Yeah, four games. Liverpool, Burnley, Bournemouth, Watford. James? Right, James and DR really struggling with the concept of points. I'm glad Nick, you're on the ball. 7 points was enough. Just throw a number at, even if it don't work.
You should have seen it when they changed to 3 points a game.
Yeah.
Five.
You'd be happy with five.
I think a win and two draws.
Watford win.
DR still can't
get it. Watford win, Bournemouth draw, Burnley win, and Liverpool loss.
So you're still saying 7 points?
Oh, yeah. All right, yeah, I agree with you.
Unbelievable. He's agreeing with Nick. What a show this has been. The Crystal Palace Fan Show, as it is every Tuesday on Love Sport Radio, 8 to 9. I'm joined by Nick Gillard, DR Kernas and James Howard, the back of the net podcast. This has been the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. Eagles!
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.